we're seeing the continuing downward trend of COVID-19 cases in the U.S., although it seems to be leveling off, plateauing nationally around just under 60,000 cases a day, which is still a high number. But even at that level, it's down 12% over the last 2 weeks. The total number of cases we think that have occurred in the U.S. Is over 29 million, and the death count currently stands at 524,000. In Washington State, we've continued to see a drop in activity, so we're averaging 678 cases a day. That's an 18% decrease over 2 weeks, and the case rate statewide is about 140 per 100,000 over a two-week period. And that contrasts with Jefferson County, where we've dropped even lower. Our case rate is now just under 16 cases per 100,000 per 2 weeks. And this represents no cases in the last week. So there were 5 cases the week before, and none at all in the last week. So that's really what we like to see. And this is the lowest we've been in a long time. Likewise, Clallam County's rate has dropped. They're at 32 per 100,000. Kitsap is at 61 per 100,000. And in Mason County, which is in our roadmap region, is at 38 per 100,000. And I got a KPTZ listener question sort of asking, why is this happening? Why are the rates lower? And the conventional wisdom on this, it's been called the four S's, social distancing, seasonality, seroprevalence, and shots. So the social distancing and the masking and all these things we've learned to do makes a huge difference in preventing spread, especially of asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic infections. So people who are infected and don't know about it, if they're wearing a mask and social distancing, they don't spread the infection. Seasonality is something we see with all respiratory infections as we move into spring and summer and spend more time outdoors and have more fresh air ventilation. Influenza and other respiratory diseases go down, and so too does COVID-19. Seroprevalence is a medical term for how many people have immunity. So either naturally acquired immunity, and we think that may be around 30% in some areas of the U.S. at this point, even higher in some states. However, in Washington State, we just had a recent study saying we may have one of the lowest seroprevalence rates in the country, that, at least from natural infection. And that's a consequence of having done a really good job in preventing transmission, is we don't have as much naturally acquired herd immunity. And then shots, of course, is the vaccination. So those are the four factors. And listener also asked, are Jefferson County residents still coming in for testing? And that's a very important question, because in order to keep these rates low, we need to keep testing up. So the testing has gone down, but we think it's because there's less illness. And we need to encourage anyone with any flu-like symptoms or any COVID symptoms whatsoever, or people who have been exposed to a known case, it's still very important to get tested, because we have treatments for COVID-19 if it turns out to be a serious case, and we know how to contain the infection. We know how to prevent it from spreading to others, but we have to diagnose it first. So continuous testing is really important. Other big news today, the CDC is putting out their long-awaited guidelines, in terms of what can you do if you're fully vaccinated? And this has been a question on people's minds for a long time. So just in a quick review of these, what the CDC recommends, if you are fully immunized, so that means 2 weeks after the second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, or 2 weeks after the single dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, then you can gather indoors with other fully vaccinated people with no restrictions, no masking, no distancing. You can also gather indoors with unvaccinated individuals who are at low risk of having severe COVID complications. And that's good news for vaccinated grandparents can now, under the CDC guidance, visit unvaccinated grandchildren without masking, without distancing, as long as those grandchildren are not at high risk for complications. And there's actually a long list that the CDC keeps. There's 12 conditions that are known to cause a high risk of complications, and there's 11 conditions that cause possibly increase the risk. So those are what they're referring to. And then there's also some changes in quarantine requirements.
Yeah. Can I ask a follow-up? I'm just curious how these CDC rules dovetail with Washington state rules.
Washington state will likely follow the CDC guidance. We try to do that whenever possible. And in some rare instances, we have more stringent standards than the CDC. We virtually never have a less stringent standard than they do.
But it would take the governor making an adjustment to the roadmap to readiness to accommodate those changes that CDC is suggesting, right?
Well, these particular ones are kind of guidance type. So they're recommendations as opposed to requirements. And I haven't looked into how it might affect the governor's proclamations, because potentially it would. You know, when we get to the point where we have fully vaccinated workforces, then what that would mean is that the people in those workforces they would no longer need to mask or distance in the work setting. We're already seeing this in terms of there was a change a couple weeks ago that if you're fully vaccinated and are exposed to a known case, you no longer have to quarantine. However, there are exceptions to that. If you're a healthcare worker, if you're a long-term care facility worker, then we still have you quarantine for the 14 days. These are 5 pages of recommendations, and I actually have not found a print copy of it yet. So I imagine there's some nuance to them, but they are the effort of a bunch of experts to try to answer this important question, you know, what can I do when I'm fully vaccinated? Because more and more people are following into that or falling into that category. And specifically, moving on to vaccine news, in Washington state, it's now a little under 16% of the Washington state population has received at least one dose. 8.97, so 9% are fully vaccinated, and Washington has already hit our goal was to do at least 45,000 vaccinations a day, and in this last week we exceeded that goal, so we are up to 45,000. Now appears we'll be able to go much higher than that because as the vaccine supply increases. So we really have no upper limit goal in that respect. But we've been able to ramp this up faster than we were projecting even a month ago, And vaccine supplies are really supposed to open up in April and May. And they'll be steadily increasing this month. Yes.
I have a question. I have someone in my family who's in her early 70s and has been just waiting because she said there are other people who need it more than me. She's very isolated and took that good advice that you gave a few weeks back. But I'm just wondering at what point do these people in the age range that are eligible for vaccination should, you know, move forward with getting them in terms of supply?
Well, I would say the time is now. Jefferson Healthcare is now down to they're extending invitations to set up appointments for people 65 years of age and older. So they're down to, and the pharmacies have been at that threshold for some time. So, you know, I would absolutely encourage everyone who's eligible to get vaccinated, and certainly the elderly, because that's the group we know has the highest risk of complications.
Did you hear that, Donna? Thanks, Dr. Locke.
Right, and there was a KPTZ listener who said, I believe she said she's 72 and she's on the list and wonders what's happening. And actually, she should have been called. So there might be a glitch there. Anyone who's over 70, and certainly, actually at this point, if you're over about 66 or 67 and you haven't heard, and you're on the Jefferson Healthcare list and haven't heard from them, something went wrong. You might have gotten an invitation and you missed it. So recontact them. Make sure to let them know you're still interested, because they are scheduling appointments for anyone 65 and older or under any of the other eligibility lists. And that eligible list expanded last week. So teachers and actually all school workers, so bus drivers and janitors, anyone who works for the school systems, K through 12, actually pre-K through 12, is now eligible. And we worked quickly last week to get that set up. So they're actually doing second dose vaccinations today, but tomorrow they were vaccinating teachers on Friday. And they will vaccinate more today. Oh, I'm sorry, tomorrow will be, I think there's 390 some appointments scheduled. And Tri-Area Pharmacy in Chimicum, Port Hadlock, has received, or supposed to receive 500 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine this week. Wow. And they've been reaching out to the schools in Chimicum, Quilicine, and Brennan, and to set up vaccination events for teachers at the schools or at some central location. So we're moving quickly on that. We think we can vaccinate the teachers and childcare workers, most of them this week, and then finish up next week is the plan. So we're moving through the tiers. And then next up, starting on Monday, March 22nd, will be the next tier is gonna open up. And this is high risk critical workers in what are called high risk congregate settings. So critical workers working in settings where there's an increased risk of transmission. Pregnant women will be added to the list at that time, and also people with certain disabilities that increase the risk of COVID complications will also be added to the list. And then we're predicting those groups will take us kind of the rest of March and into early April, and then more tiers will start up in kind of mid-April, and then some are predicting that the supplies will really accelerate in May to the point that that anyone who wants to get vaccinated may be able to do so as early as May. There's no guarantees on that, but that's when we're really expecting to see large supplies of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's going to be in April and May and June. Yes, Mr. Morley.
Yeah, so on the March 22nd group, would that include potentially workers in confined spaces like GEFCOM dispatchers?
Yes, absolutely. They are specifically mentioned. So in the priorities, so first responders that were not covered under the 1A group. So first responders who were not doing direct patient care, as long as they're working in an indoor setting for more than 3 hours over a 24-hour period, which I certainly think they are, they are specifically eligible, and we'll try to do everything we can to prioritize them. So starting the 22nd to make sure that they get vaccinated, because their services are of course critical.
Great, and hopefully anybody that might have been missed from within jail staffing would also be important, I would think, too.
Yes, among the congregate facility groups, it will definitely jail staff and correctional facility staff, and we've worked out with so Clallam County is going to take care of Olympic Correction Facility in West Jefferson. Mm-hmm. We decided that made more sense because they're going to be doing the Clallam Bay Prison, and they've got quite a bit of vaccination operations going on in the West End centered in Forks. And so we decided that's the logical thing. And if we need to transfer some vaccine to them, if we need to order it in Jefferson County and transfer it to Clallam, we'll certainly do that. Yes, Commissioner Brotherton.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on other West End residents. So I think most of them are, or at least on the north side of our West End, are kind of in the Forks Hospital District. So they're getting it through there. And what can you tell us how the vaccine efforts are going down and, you know, and then the park and those areas down in the southwest end?
Yeah, we've been working with them, and of that West End population, which is about 1,000 people, half of them are tribal citizens of one tribe or another, and many of those individuals have received the vaccine through their through the Quinault tribe or the Queets tribe. We've made arrangements that, so the Ho tribe, their vaccination was in Forks. So it kind of depends on where they go for regular medical services. They had a choice of several locations. So we really appreciate that. Clallam County has been sort of is the number one vaccinator in the state right now, is way ahead of anyone else, and they've been very helpful in providing access to West Jefferson. If that wasn't available, we would have gone out and done it, but our partner county was able to do it a lot more efficiently than we could, because they could base it out of Forks.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so there are no other questions. I'll move on to the KPDZ questions. We've already covered a couple of them, but there was one question that asked about with high quality masks, N95 or KN95, can you reuse them? And the answer is yes. If you're not working in a high risk medical setting like an ICU, if you're just using them for non-medical purposes, the masks are often quite durable. And so what we recommend is you let them dry out thoroughly. If you want them to be thoroughly disinfected, you would let them dry for 3 days. And after 3 days, virtually anything, any viruses or bacteria that were on them would be inactivated at that point. But generally, people just for everyday use reuse those masks until they seem to not fit well. The fit is critical to the function of the mask. So if the edges get bent or the mask deteriorates, then you stop wearing it. And if it becomes damp, you should stop wearing it and let it dry out. I think I covered the question. There was a question about, you know, why do people who are fully vaccinated not need to quarantine? And the basis of that, the CDC went with that recommendation because that was essentially the recommendation if you had had COVID infection. So if you had had it and recovered, you were no longer required to quarantine if it had been within 3 months of your infection. And so they extended that same recommendation to people that were vaccinated. And then as of today, it's gone even beyond that. But as I mentioned, that's not for 100% of people. And it's really a lot of it. We do have concerns that vaccinated individuals can potentially get low-level infections, inapparent infections that under certain circumstances they could transmit. And always people who are vaccinated and develop symptoms need to be tested. The vaccines are not 100% effective at preventing infection. So all of these quarantine, all of these CDC recommendations about what you can and can't do if you're vaccinated are based on the assumptions that you're well. You do not have a symptomatic illness. Because if you have symptoms, you should be isolating yourself and be tested until you know what the cause of your symptoms is. There was a question from a listener that said, actually reported that their mother had a vaccine recently, and then 2 days later got vertigo, kind of spinning dizziness. And could this be a vaccine reaction? And the answer is vertigo has been reported after the vaccine. It's temporary. It goes away after a couple days, but it is one of the reactions that's been reported. It's also, we can see what are called temporal associations. You can get vaccinated and then you can have a problem that's caused by something completely different that would have happened with or without the vaccine. And in a lot of cases, we just can't tell. They asked if there's a way to report side effects, and indeed there is. There's a agency called VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's been around for a long time. It's been there to report any vaccine-related reaction. So there's a VAERS hotline, V-A-E-R-S. You know, if you search for that, it'll give you a 1-800 number where you can report vaccine side effects. Also, for people who get vaccinated, one of the things we encourage everyone to do is to sign up for this CDC program called VSafe. So you go on their website and they send you a text message at intervals, actually every few days right after your vaccine, and then on a weekly basis for several months after your vaccination. And they ask you a series of questions, and they're doing this to accumulate a very large database of side effects so we can more accurately predict what's going to happen when people get the vaccine. So we encourage reporting of any adverse reactions, and if they're serious adverse reactions, you should see a medical provider. And because it's not guaranteed that it's the vaccine, it could be something else.
Dr. Locke, that last location that you mentioned, is that for just people who are experiencing side effects, or were you saying that was for anybody that was vaccinated?
The CDC V-Safe program is for anyone who's vaccinated. So this is a voluntary thing that you sign up for. Sign up online, and then they send you text messages inquiring on your health at regular intervals, and then they compile all that data. And they now have millions of people in the V-Safe system, so we're getting much more accurate information about side effects than we had with the relatively small clinical trials that were done. There was a kind of a interesting and complicated question, or someone saying that their daughter had a bad case of COVID-19, still had fatigue and vertigo, and she's a teacher, so she got her first vaccine shot and started to have side effects from that. And should she get a second shot? And that's one where she really needs some medical consultation, because officially we recommend that everyone who's had COVID-19 and is eligible for the vaccine go ahead and get the full vaccine series. So two doses of the Moderna or Pfizer, or one dose of the Johnson & Johnson. But we have some pretty good data that says that people who have had COVID-19 get a really good, that acts as their primary dose, and one dose gives them very good immunity. This would be kind of a complicated risk-benefit discussion with her provider, whether, depending on how severe the side effects of the vaccine were, it may be that one dose is going to be sufficient. You could only tell that by someone knowledgeable about the vaccine talking to her personally and in depth. A question asked, can the immune system overreact from the vaccine when you've previously had COVID-19? And that was very specifically tested in the clinical trials. And based on what we know so far, the answer is no. People who have had COVID-19 don't have any stronger reactions to the vaccine than anyone else. And they do benefit from the vaccine because it gives them a boosted immune response. They develop higher antibody titers to the spike protein, which we think is the best form of infection. Or I'm sorry, the best form of protection from infection. There's a question, are you able to estimate when, as a 60 to 70 year old, I'll be able to get the vaccine? So if you're 65 and older, it's now. If you're a healthy 60-year-old who doesn't fall into these any of the special eligibility criteria, if you have no medical coexisting conditions, it's probably not going to be till May. So if you don't fit into any of the priority tiers in Washington State, and there are four of them, and we're just still on tier one of the four, then realistically it's going to be May, but that's sooner than we were previously estimating. I think that's it. We covered the other ones during the commissioner's questions there.
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, just one or two more questions. I guess about vaccine hesitancy and vaccine passports. I'm just wondering if you can use your crystal ball a little bit. I know we're not going to be compelling people to do it, but do you think that we should be pursuing an educational campaign to combat vaccine hesitancy? And second question, I imagine to fly on a plane, you might need a vaccine passport of some sort, but do you think that that's going to be a widespread equity issue? I mean, are we gonna have people that are haves and have nots with the vaccines and access to services?
Well, we hope to get out of this what's essentially a shortage situation right now, where demand is much higher than supply. And in that setting, Having any special requirements for travel would, I think, be an equity issue. As we, you know, we call there's a lean engineering term for where we are right now. We're in the pull phase of vaccination, where the demand is way higher than the supply. And so people are really motivated to get vaccinated. But at some point, probably in May or June, the tide will turn and we'll be in the push phase, where we really have to motivate and incentivize and educate people to get vaccinated so that we can get the rates up to the 70 to 80% that we need. And it's going to be a difficult thing to do because there is vaccine hesitancy out there, and vaccination, like everything else, has also gotten tied up with these culture war partisan issues, where and so we need to get beyond those if we want to get to the 70-80% and bring the pandemic to an end. So yes, we're ramping up for those education campaigns. We're also do everything we can to make vaccine as convenient as possible. You know, once we have adequate supply, is to, you know, have the vaccine in every medical clinic and pharmacy, and bring the vaccine to people rather than having them have to come to us. But right now we're in a phase where we're trying to vaccinate as many people as we can, as fast as we can, as supplies allow, which means, and I'm sure Willie would like to report on this, that it means that we're moving ahead with our mass vaccination efforts. And we're now, we're putting an order in this today, actually, for 300 doses of the Moderna vaccine. And if we get it, we will administer those on the 21st of March, is now our provisional plan. So we can't schedule for this yet because we will not know until this Friday whether we're actually going to get that vaccine. But as long as we do, we're ready to go ahead.
Can I ask another question? I have another crystal ball question. I like revisiting questions I asked a couple weeks ago. So a couple weeks ago, I said, Dr. Luck, do you have a crystal ball about events in the fall? And all of you know that I was formerly very attached to the Wooden Boat Festival and the Maritime Center. And they haven't asked me lately, but I'm just wondering where we are with that crystal ball a few weeks hence, since I asked the question initially.
If not for the variants, I would confidently say that we would be out of this by late summer. Because now what the vaccine supply projections are, and you know, we should have more than adequate vaccine in the summer to suppress outbreaks and allow gatherings of virtually any size. The variants are a significant concern. We had a report on Friday that there's now been 70 cases of the British variant, B.1.1.7. And there's been 5 cases of the South African variant detected in Washington State. And that's the one we're most concerned about because it may have less sensitivity to the vaccine. So it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the British variant is going to become the predominant strain in the U.S., including Washington State, by the end of March. It's already about 20% of cases in the U.S. And how much that's going to change our projections or complicate control issues is just unknown at this point. But we're still hopeful that we will be this coming summer will be much less restricted than the prior one.
Thank you. Heidi had to grab a quick call. Any more questions for Dr. Locke? If not, let's move on to Willie Bentz. Hi, Willie.
Hello and thank you, Commissioner. So as Dr. Locke alluded to, we're getting hopeful we'll be able to start opening up some community mass vaccination clinics here by the end of the month. So Jefferson Healthcare is at just about their full capacity for being able to administer a vaccine. They're doing both first and second doses this week for about 350 people a day for 6 days a week. So this is the fourth week in a row they've gotten first dose vaccine. Again, they're just stretched out to their capacity, which means that it's our turn to step up, help augment their efforts, and then open up some mass community vaccination clinics. So we don't know if we're going to get the vaccine to be able to do so. As Dr. Locke said, we'll know by Friday. And right now we rate it at about a coin flip, on about a 50-50 shot as to whether or not we're gonna get that vaccine in to be able to operate that clinic. But when and if we do, we'll obviously have more information about the specific dates, times, and then who that's gonna be available for. Right now, again, we have 65 plus, 50 plus in multi-generational household, as well as school teachers, but there's a chance that we can start working on those additional critical workers as well. So we're optimistic. Again, right now we're rating it as a coin flip though, but again, we're hopeful we can start doing that by the end of the month. And again, this will be an augment to Jefferson Healthcare's and the pharmacy's current operations. You know, right now, obviously Jefferson Healthcare is in Port Townsend. We're gonna be bringing these clinics out to other communities to make it more accessible for folks. Jefferson Healthcare is starting to operate 6 days a week. We're looking to operate on weekends for folks who can't make it to the hospital during the week, things like that. So again, we'll know by this Friday and we'll have information out then, but I'm really hoping come this time next week, we'll be able to announce that we're gonna be operating our first joint DEM and public health clinic. So stay tuned for more information there. As usual, the bulk of the KPTZ questions were for Dr. Locke. I got a single solitary question this week, but I'll take what I can get. And it was about volunteer opportunities for this mass vaccination clinic. So I've touched on this for a couple of weeks, but again, if you have some skills to offer and you wanna help out, contact us at jcdem@co.jefferson.wa.us. And the core need is for folks with a license to practice medicine in the state of Washington. It can either be active or inactive. And we need those folks to actually both administer the vaccine as well as to help out and monitor folks for side effects for 15 minutes after they receive that vaccine. So we do need those, again, those medical volunteers with a license in state, but it can be either active or inactive now, thanks to some changes to the PREP Act. If you don't have a medical license, we need help with everything from traffic control to greeting people at the door, to help with logistics, moving things, getting set up. We need, again, help with paperwork and getting folks to the medical area. And then if you can't be there physically and can't maybe stand or move things for long periods of time, we also can use help at our call center here at the EOC. We're still activating that Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. That doesn't require a lot of physical exertion, but it does require some skills on the computer as well as some phone skills. So if you that's a little bit more your speed, again, we do have those opportunities as well. If you're unsure and all you have is some time and some willingness to help, do reach out to us anyway, and we surely can put you to work. Right now, there's a real heavy lift to get these things up and running. So don't hesitate to contact us just to have a conversation. The last thing I'll mention, just since I do have a couple of minutes, goes back to Commissioner Brotherton's point about vaccine hesitancy. And as Dr. Locke said, we have been talking about campaigns to motivate folks, to help convince folks to get the vaccine. But again, as he said, we're definitely in that that phase right now, the poll phase where we're trying to get folks in. So there will be campaigns that we will be trying to convince folks to get the vaccine. And I certainly understand folks' hesitancy around, you know, kind of a new medicine. I did get the emergency use authorization, but I still, that makes folks a little bit nervous. And I, I know people are sitting and kind of waiting to see how it affects other people. And I do certainly understand their hesitation, the idea that, hey, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, let me stick this needle in your arm. You know, everyone has a right to be a little bit nervous about that. So what I would ask the community, obviously, again, we're going to do public messaging, but that's only going to take us so far. I would really encourage people to talk about their vaccine experience, because there are side effects that are going to occur, especially after your second shot. But once you do get vaccinated, talk with your friends, talk with your family, talk with your coworkers, kind of let them know what it was like and what you went through, and hopefully that it wasn't really that bad at the end. Because this vaccine is, again, a really essential part of helping us ending this pandemic and to establish that herd immunity. And I don't think there's a more powerful influence in our lives than friends and family. So please do talk about your vaccine experience. Don't push it on other people. We don't need you to go out and kind of preach and kind of force other people to go get this. But just talk with each other, convince your friends, family, and neighbors that this is the right thing to do. And I think that'll go a long way towards, again, helping us vaccinate as many people as possible and then eventually getting us out of this pandemic. So that's my call to action from the community there. Other than that, that's all I wanted to throw out there. So any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, Commissioner Brotherton.
Yes. I want to go back to the cutaway that DEN got from Jefferson Transit for allowing folks with accessibility issues to get in for testing. And I'm wondering if that is going to be able to be used at all for people with accessibility issues to get the vaccine as well.
So right now, not for the vaccine. We're currently working with a few other agencies to help identify transportation assets in the community to help them get to the vaccination site. Specifically because when we were getting folks to the testing site, that was for folks who had symptoms. We even used that resource to help transport people home from the hospital who were sick with COVID. That was a very specific need. We did that to, again, protect some of our transit workers, protect some other in the transportation industry. Transporting people to the vaccine site, it's going to be a little bit more of a lift for us because there are a lot more folks and it's less of a risky proposition. So we're talking with a few different agencies, identifying transportation resources out there. Because those do exist for those folks who don't have symptoms, who don't have COVID. So if you do have transportation needs and are looking for a way to go and get to the vaccination site, that's another thing you can call our call center about. We do have one of our supervisors who's taking point on that issue for us. So I'll reiterate that number again. It's 360-344-9791. Give us a call. Again, we have a supervisor who's point on this issue, who's working to identify those resources. And if you call in, we can certainly connect you and get you some help there.
Great, thank you.
Willie, question. Are there volunteer needs that folks don't need to be vaccinated to fill? Or are there controls in place that people who are unvaccinated can feel welcome to be helping out?
Yeah, every single one of our volunteer opportunities, because you're not working with anyone who's symptomatic or who's COVID positive, at this point in time, we're unable to vaccinate all of our volunteers, unfortunately. They don't represent that that 1A tier. But to protect our volunteers, we're offering medical grade PPE. We're working to protect them that way. We're social distancing. Here at the call center in the EOC, where we're separating folks, we do have medical grade air filters. Everyone's double masked, et cetera. So we're protecting folks that way. Really grateful to Dr. Locke for helping kind of review some of our plans and procedures and working to ensure everyone is protected. So. You don't have to be vaccinated to volunteer with us. We are doing our best to get as many of our volunteers vaccinated as possible. But again, most of them fall outside of the tiered guidance system right now. So we're unable to vaccinate everyone. So if you do reach out to us and are looking to volunteer and are looking to that as kind of your foothold in to get vaccinated early, I'm really sorry that's probably not going to happen. However, we are going to protect you and we are going to care for your safety and really make that our number one priority. So you don't have to be vaccinated. We'll be, you know, again, outfitting you with medical grade PPE and protecting you that way.
Great. Please sign me up. I want to volunteer.
Careful what you wish for while I do the list.
Good. Yeah, it's and it actually feels, you know, someone who's going to be really late in the game to get vaccinated just because of age and health, good health. It actually feels like a really nice proactive thing to be able to do. So look forward to it. Philip, did you have a question or comment?
Heidi did.
Oh, sorry. No, I saw a hand up there.
It's okay. Maybe we should have Commissioner Day on the vaccine line.
Yeah.
As long as we're distanced apart. Anyway, I just want to thank you guys for all your leadership and work in response to this. I don't think a year ago when we were, you know, closing things down, we could have imagined what we were going to go through. And we are at about, for me, the year mark of thinking about and dealing with this pandemic. So just really appreciative of both of you, Tom and Willie, for all your leadership. Amazing work you've done over the last year.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it was a year ago Friday that we had our first case diagnosed in Jefferson County. Is that right, Dr. Luck?
Yes, indeed. And I would I really appreciate that. And I'm sure it extends to all the health department staff,
oh,
and
yeah,
especially our communicable disease control nurses. People do not have no sense of how arduous that is, and it's just unrelenting, you know, day after day, 7 days a week. Now, fortunately, they've gotten a breather with our decreased activity. So as Willie knows, they've dived into the vaccine planning efforts, and they're great resources because they're really sort of the nurse vaccine experts of the county. They've all given thousands of vaccines. So we're using their expertise.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Well, thank you very much for all your hard work and the update. We and the public greatly appreciate it. And we will see you next week.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.